Bhishmadev was approached by Yudhisthira Maharaj, the sages, the Pandavas, and even Krishna himself, as he lay on his bed of arrows, nearing the time when he would leave this world, a very dramatic time. And when Bhishma saw the Pandavas, his heart melted, he was so full of affection. Why did his heart melt, and what caused him to even cry, this great powerful warrior? What caused him to cry? What caused his eyes to fill with tears was that he was remembering the sufferings that the Pandavas went through, not for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour or a day or a week or a month or 3 months, but it was years and years and years. They were exiled for 14 years. And again, so much tribulation from their childhood. And Krishna was their friend even. And Arjuna was so powerful, and Bhim was so powerful, and Yudhisthira was the personification of religion, and yet they suffered unlimitedly. And now, the plan of the Lord more or less had been fully revealed. After so many years, Yudhisthira was now the king, and the enemies, the envious, were vanquished. So when Bhishma was remembering the suffering that the Pandavas went through, his heart was cracking. And he said that this must have happened, this is what we read yesterday, by the will of the Lord. The time factor is irreversible, and that time factor is none different from Krishna. Krishna's will is done. It must be Krishna's will that this happened. Otherwise, how could, in his presence, and you, the personification of goodness, Yudhisthira, how could it have happened to you? So it must be Krishna's desire. And sages may meditate on the Supreme Lord's desire or his plan, looking at the world and what's going on. Sometimes we can't understand what the purpose of it is. No one, even the great sages, can understand what Krishna is up to, what his plan is, and what his ultimate desire is. And then Bhishma explains, and that Supreme Lord, who is the controller of everything, he is present before us as Krishna himself, who is acting as your friend, as your brother, as your cousin. In such intimate ways, he's been acting, and he is that Supreme Lord. When we mean Supreme Lord, we should remember that we mean the one who is the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Creator, the source of everything, the ultimate destroyer, and yet he's standing right before Bhishmadev and the Pandavas, and has acted so intimately with the Pandavas, even as the chariot driver of Arjuna. So Bhishmadev was saying, that Supreme Lord is Krishna, and he's right here. And after describing Krishna's qualities as equal to all, yet that Supreme Lord, Bhishmadev, is so kind that he has come to be present, standing before me as I leave from this world. That is his causeless mercy. No one can force God to do anything against his will. That is the definition of God. He is the only one who is swatantra, independent. Everyone else is dependent on him. He does as he likes. No one can force him to do anything, and yet, being pulled by the love and devotion of Bhishmadev, Krishna made so many arrangements. He brought the Pandavas, he glorified Bhishmadev by having him speak the philosophy that could convince Yudhisthira. what he himself, Krishna and the rishis, were unable to convince Yudhisthira to glorify Bhishma Dev. And then Bhishma Dev said to Yudhisthira that you should rule this kingdom. No. You should rule the kingdom. You're attracted to the wonderful fragrance of the garlands. You should rule this kingdom. Because the people are fully dependent upon you. This is Krishna's desire. And then, Maharaj Yudhisthira, although Bhishma Dev, just imagine the scene, Bhishma Dev was pierced with so many arrows, but yet Maharaj Yudhisthira then asked him a question. Now, when someone is shot full of arrows, the last thing you want to do is put questions to them. But yet Maharaj Yudhisthira did, by Krishna's desire, because Krishna wanted to make this point very strongly, that his pure devotee, even at the time of death, is fully competent. His mind is clear and fully competent even at the time of death to speak on the most subtle of topics. If you were there in person, or if you saw the video of Srila Prabhupada's last day, his final instructions, when quite amazing, when he was translating fully lucidly, and there he was, practically quite incredible. And yet he was translating fully, in full presence of his mind. So to glorify Bhishma Dev further, Krishna had Yudhisthira ask questions about, in text 25, Suta Goswami continues narrating this story. Who is he speaking to? The sages of Namasharanya. And this again is all leading up to how Maharaj Prickett, how the Bhagavatam was spoken, the circumstances surrounding that, which those questions were asked in the fourth chapter. Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishma Dev speak in that appealing tone, when he was saying that Krishna has so kindly come to me to be present before my eyes at the time of my death, then Maharaj Yudhisthira could understand, because of Bhishma Dev's words, that Bhishma Dev was going to leave this world. And his heart also was melting. So he asked further, he asked him, Bhishma Dev, in the presence of all the great rishis, about the essential principles of various religious duties. So then, Bhishma Dev, as verses 26, 27, and 28 describe, Bhishma Dev then very systematically, in terms of individual's qualification, one's placement becomes in vana and ashrama. One is placed in the vana ashrama, the Vedic social system, according to one's qualification. And then he described the duties, including the duties of a king, which were especially important for Yudhisthira to hear. But he described everyone's duties in vana, in terms of vana and ashrama. In the verse it says that he explained it in brief and in essence. And in the Mahabharata, these instructions are given in much more detail. Now, in Prabhupada's purports here, well, we don't have time to read much, but he gives some of the instructions, which are very wonderful. I'll read just a few segments. Bhishma Dev advised for all human beings 9 qualifications. This is on page 501 if you wish to read along. 5 qualifications for all human beings, regardless of your position in vana and ashrama. Not to become angry. Don't get angry at me for saying that. Not to lie. To equally distribute wealth. To forgive. To beget children only by one's legitimate wife. To be pure in mind and hygienic in body. Not to be inimical toward anyone. To be simple and to support servants or subordinates. In text 27, he then explained by division acts of charity, the pragmatic activities of kings, and activities for salvation. Then he described the duties of women and devotees, both briefly and extensively. Now here, starting on page 24, Prabhupada really, in his explaining the Raja Dharma, the duties of a king, the occupational duties of a king, he really shows he reveals the modern administrator's mentality. I'll read that. Raja Dharma is a great science, unlike modern diplomacy for political supremacy. The kings were trained systematically to become munificent and not merely be tax collectors. That's one thing you could always be sure of. The more they talk about tax cuts, the more they will somehow take your money in a different way. Because otherwise, how will the salaries and the bureaucracy? Because if they cut back the tax collecting, then their salaries will be weak, and this useless bureaucracy won't be there. And then if they employ so many people by the bureaucracy, and if those people don't have employment, they won't vote for them. So they always have to increase the taxes. They were trained to perform sacrifices only for the prosperity of the subjects. To lead the prajas to the attainment of salvation was a great duty of the king. The father, the spiritual master, and the king are not to become irresponsible in the matter of leading their subjects to the path of ultimate liberation from birth, death, disease, and old age. No one ever hears that as a campaign promise. If you vote for me, I will lead you to the spiritual world and you will end disease and old age and death. When these primary duties are properly discharged, there is no need of government of the people, by the people. In other words, the people will be satisfied. In modern days, the people in general occupy the administration by the strength of manipulated votes. But they are never trained in the primary duties of the king, and that is not possible. Also not possible for anyone. Does any person make them the king? Under the circumstances, the untrained administrators play havoc to make the subjects happy in all respects. In other words, they cause more trouble. The solutions they make are worse than the problems. On the other hand, these untrained administrators gradually become rogues and thieves and increase the taxation to finance a top-heavy administration that is useless for all purposes. Actually, the qualified brahmanas are meant to give direction to the kings for proper administration in terms of the scriptures like Manusamhita and Dharma Shastras of Parasara. A typical king is the ideal of the people in general, and it's so natural that people want a hero for a king, and they want a king naturally who has heroic temperament, someone they can look up to and follow. He's the ideal of the people in general. And if the king is pious, religious, chivalrous, and munificent, the citizens generally follow him. And if the king, on the other hand, if the leaders are low class rogues, then the citizens will also generally follow. Such a king is not a lazy, sensuous person living at the cost of the subjects, but is alert always to kill thieves and dacoits. The pious kings were not merciful to dacoits. Dacoit means plunderers, the criminals, and thieves in the name of nonsensical ahimsa, nonviolence. The thieves and dacoits were punished in an exemplary way so that in the future no one would dare commit such nuisance in an organized form. Such thieves and dacoits were never meant for administration as they are now. Instead of being punished. I once saw a bumper sticker when I was in the United States during an election year. I've probably mentioned this 50 times over my time in Perth. But it said, "Support organized crime. Vote." The taxation law was simple. There was no force, no encroachment. The king had a right to take one-fourth of the production made by the subject. The king had a right to claim a fourth of one's allotted wealth. One would never grudge parting with it because due to the pious king and religious harmony, there was enough natural wealth, namely grains, fruits, flowers, silk, cotton, milk, jewels, minerals, and therefore no one was materially unhappy. The citizens were rich in agriculture and animal husbandry, and therefore they had enough grains, fruits, and milk without any artificial need of soap and toilets, cinemas, and bars. In Vrindavan, instead of buying some expensive soap to clean the pots and pans and plates, you use mati, just some earth. And it cleans it so nicely, it cleans everything so nicely. And it's free, and it's biodegradable. You just put it right back from whence it came. But if you tried to do this in this country, you'd be arrested probably, or if they found out. Headlines of the community newspaper. Scott uses mud. Weird cult forces Scott to clean pots with mud. It's cheap, it works. There's no poison involved. There's one other one I'll read. As far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. It's such cheating that we're so much unaware of. There's how many times a day should you brush your teeth? Twice, okay. Everyone knows you're supposed to brush 3 times a day after every meal, brush after every meal. You know who started that? It was this Madison Avenue ad company when the toothpaste people were hired a company to, they wanted to increase their sales 3 times as much. So they started advertising. They got some people who look like dentists and saying that and very, very serious, you know. And they, instead of calling it toothpaste, they call it a dentifrice in the United States when they're doing these ads, make it sound very official. And they say, as your dentist recommends, to decrease your cavities, you should brush after every meal. And when you brush, use this particular toothpaste, like that. So the dentists don't have anything to do with it. It's just the toothpaste people trying to sell more toothpaste. And then there is there's another famous story how this one man, he figured out this how to sell unlimited more shampoo. An advertising man again. So where it says, what does it say on the back of all shampoo? It says, wash. What does it say? Anyone know what it says? Wash, repent, it repeat. His brainstorm was to put the word repeat in there. Wash, rinse, repeat. wash, rinse, repeat. You can't get out of it either once you start doing it. It's an endless cycle. You're caught. Does anyone know computers yet here? Where there's an old joke, someone, some computer programmer, because when you program this, you get into something called an endless loop like that. You know, it tells you to do something and it does the same thing again and again, wash, rinse, repeat. So this computer program was in the shower and he was reading that, wash, rinse, repeat, and he was doing it for 3 hours. And his daughter saw that he wasn't out. She said, "Reset, Dad, reset, reset." It's a computer joke. Anyway, that man was famous in Madison Avenue, the one who put repeat in there. That's cheating. As far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To become free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance only, one can conquer desires and avarice, greed. Disturbance from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes, and money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger, and worldliness can be avoided by culturing the knowledge of impermanence. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up, and false arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. And by prowess, one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation. One must be free from lust, avarice, anger, dreaming, etc., to actually attain the path of salvation. As far as the women class are concerned, they are accepted as a power of inspiration for men. As such, women are more powerful than men. Mighty Julius Caesar was controlled by a Cleopatra. Such powerful women are controlled by shyness. Therefore, shyness is important for women. Once this control valve is loosened, women can create havoc in society by adultery. Adultery means production of unwanted children known as Vanasankara, who disturb the world. Very powerful condemnations by Srila Prabhupada of modern civilization. Text 28. Thus Bhishma Dev describe the occupational duties of different orders and statuses of life, citing instances from history, from the Puranas. For he himself was well acquainted with the truth. 29. While Bhishma Dev was describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. The Sanskrit word for that is Uttarayan. This period is desired by mystics who die at their will. And the Bhagavad Gita describes how the mystic process of yoga is prescribed. And by that process, in the 8th chapter, Attaining the Supreme, it describes how by the process of yoga one raises the life air in this way and that way, and he can actually leave his body behind at any time he wants. So it is recommended that he leave when the sun is Uttarayana, when it passes to the northern side, so he does not come back again into this material world. This instruction is meant for yogis, because Krishna explains that the devotee, his path is somewhat different. His path is to always think about Krishna and not worry about when he leaves his body. Do not be concerned with this, Krishna tells Arjuna, but yet it is part of the yogic process. So it's interesting. So Bhishma Dev was waiting for Uttarayana because he could leave whenever he wanted. So he was waiting for the mystic time when the sun went into Magh in January. This is by the solar calendar. Every January, there's when the sun goes into the Rasi sign. Which is, what does it go into in January? Anyone know? Huh? Is it? Makar. Yeah, Makar Sankranti. Yeah, that's when Bhishma Dev, right after that. The Sankranti is when it's when the sun changes its signs. And Makar is Capricorn. So, but there's another meaning. Uttara means north, like Uttar Pradesh, the northern state or country. But Uttarayana has another meaning. He was waiting, Bhishma Dev was waiting for Uttarayana, the sun prepared to the north, but he was waiting for Uttarayana, he who is within Uttara. And that is Krishna. Because when Krishna was protecting Parikshit Maharaj, who was within Uttara, within the womb of Uttara, he protected her by expanding himself from within as the Paramatma. So therefore, Krishna can also be known as Uttarayana. So Bhishma Dev was waiting for Krishna to kindly appear before him at the moment of his death. Thereupon, that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings, and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, he stopped speaking. And being completely freed from all bondage, he withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. So this important instruction by Bhishma Dev, by his example, is that as we near death, we should withdraw our mind from all subject matters other than directly Krishna. Even though Bhishma Dev was instructing Yudhisthira on so many important things, very, very many important things which were in pursuance of Krishna's order to Yudhisthira. Yet, as soon as that moment grew near, when it was time for him to depart from his body, Uttarayan, Bhishma Dev withdrew his mind, his consciousness, from all those external things. He who knew so many things, and he who had fought in so many battles. And the tendency is to think about the past, and I did this, and I did this, and I did that. And I know this, and what about this, and what about that. But Bhishma Dev just made his mind, his consciousness, focus simply upon Krishna. And he fixed his wide open eyes upon Sri Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. As Krishna stood before him, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. So Prabhupada in his purport explains, he quotes this 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that describes the process of leaving the body, beginning with yam yam bhapi swaram bhavam jajan yam te kalevaram tantane vaktikantaya sadatad bhava bharata. Because this time is so important, and our whole life is preparation for the time of departure from this world, from this body. Because depending upon what is in our consciousness, we will take our next birth. Depending upon what we are attached to, what our bhava is, what mood we are in, we will take our next breath. So therefore Krishna's instruction in this section of the Bhagavad Gita is to always remember Him. He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering Me, undeviated from the path. That is the goal. He, O Partha, is sure to reach Me. That is Krishna consciousness. Smartavya satatam Vishnu Vishmatavya nadatu chit. Everything is to bring us to that point of always remembering Krishna and not forgetting Him, especially when it is time to die. And our life is practice for that. So how to think about Krishna? So Bhishma Dev was so fortunate because Krishna was standing before him so beautifully. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Krishna, Bhishma at once became freed from all material and auspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. His meditation was so deep on Krishna that he ceased to experience the pain caused by his body being... All his external activities of his senses at once stopped. And he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. So he focused his mind on Krishna. Beautiful Krishna who stood before him glittering, effulgent. And then he began to pray. He began to offer prayers. He began to express his heart and the depth of his meditation and the depth of his affection for Krishna. And these verses are wonderful. Bhishma Dev's prayers. Bhishma Dev said, "Let me now invest my thinking, feeling, and willing," and 32 and 33 are a more general introduction to his focusing his mind on Krishna. And then his focusing gets more specific. Krishna in relationship to his devotees, Krishna's specific pastimes, and Bhishma Dev's specific appreciation for Krishna in the rasa, in the relationship that he himself loves Krishna in. So he's focusing his consciousness on that because it's time for him to leave this world. There's nothing to hold back. This is it. He's dying. No maybes, ifs, and buts. I have to do this, I have to do that. No. This is the real thing. It is the moments just before his death. And Krishna has so kindly appeared before him. So 32 and 33 are more general. "Let me now invest," Bhishma Dev's prayers, "my thinking, feeling, and willing, which was so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties. Let me engage that thinking in the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna. He is always self-satisfied, but sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world. Although from him only the material world is created." The word vibhu is used in this verse. Sanskrit word. It means the almighty, the all-powerful. So the world, the universe, emanates from Krishna. He is all-powerful. And yet, although he is self-satisfied, and although he is not under the control of the material nature, yet he comes to this world, although he is almighty, and although he has no purpose to fulfill because he's self-satisfied, but yet he gets pleasure by coming to this world. Because he comes, hinted at, because he is the leader of the devotees, Satvata, Satyata means the devotees, and Prabhupada explains this in his purport. Although Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, this is why he comes. He himself descends on earth to bestow upon his pure devotees the boon of devotional service. So this is sambhavam yapma mayaya. He descends by his own internal potency, and he descends by his own mercy to show his kindness to his devotees. So these purports are very important. The Lord also desires, Prabhupada explains right at the end of this purport, the association of his pure devotees. And for them only, the Lord descends on the earth and enlivens them. The Lord appears out of his own will. He is not forced by the conditions of material nature. He is therefore described here as Vibhu, or the Almighty, for he is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. Now, this Almighty Lord, Krishna, has appeared before Bhishma Dev. Now, we were talking earlier at the beginning, before the class actually began, about Krishna and how to view what happens to us aspiring devotees, and how to see it as Krishna's mercy. And before one can do that, one really has to have such deep faith and attraction to Krishna, and such deep love. It's not artificial, it's not a mental adjustment. It's not that we can walk out of the class and say, from now on I'm going to see everything as Krishna's mercy. No, it takes such deep advancement. So before one can become advanced, which means a lover of Krishna, one has to fall in love with Krishna. And how does one fall in love with a person like Krishna and develop that kind of faith? By hearing about his qualities and his activities with those who already love him and whom he already loves. So in this way, we're going to hear now Bhishmadev speak of the qualities of Krishna, and Prabhupada reveals those qualities in the purports and expands them even more. So he says, Bhishma Dev says, I'm focusing my mind on Krishna, who is standing before me. And he starts thinking of Krishna in this way. Tribhuvana kamanam tamalavanam ravi karagora vara ambaram dadane vapuralaka kula vrittananubanjam vijaya sakirati rastume anavadya. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna, because the battle has just ended. And he actually fought against Krishna and Arjuna, Bhishma Dev did. And he began to remember Krishna and Arjuna, or Krishna as the friend of Arjuna, the intimate friend of Arjuna on that battlefield, which he had just seen. So he's called Vijay Sakhi. Arjuna's name is Vijay. So he's remembering Krishna as the friend of Arjuna. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his yellow face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruit of results. So this is the prayer of Bhishma Dev. He wants to be attracted to that form of Krishna who is so intimately connected with Arjuna, and who protected Arjuna from unlimited difficulties. And that Krishna is so beautiful. And Krishna means all attractive. He's beautiful by his complexion, the effulgent color resembling a tamal tree, a bluish-hued, dark, blackish, bluish-hued tree, which is so incredible in its color. And how his garments are sparkling and glittering, effulgent. And his body is so attractive that no one cannot be attracted. Even when Krishna jumped into the waters of the Jamuna to fight with Kaliya, the snake, he challenged Kaliya, and Kaliya was so envious, but still when Kaliya saw Krishna, he could not help but be attracted to this beautiful boy and admire his beauty. So he's praying, Bhishma Deva is praying at the moment of death, let my mind be attracted only to this person, Krishna. Let it not be attracted to anything fruitive, anything outside of Krishna, anything selfish. And his lotus face, Bhishma Deva said, is covered with the paintings of sandalwood pulp. That means Krishna had decorations with sandalwood pulp upon his face, which just enhanced his beauty. When one sees the deity, when he's beautifully decorated with paint or sandalwood pulp, it enhances his beauty. But yet, amazingly enough, when that is taken away, he looks still more beautiful. And then when it's put on, he still looks more beautiful. Actually, Krishna is called Bhushana Bhushanangam. That the ornaments are actually beautiful. Sandalwood isn't beautiful by itself, but when it's upon Krishna, it becomes so beautiful. Just like flowers and necklaces and crowns. When one sees them, they look okay, but they're not extraordinarily beautiful. But when they're upon Krishna, it's something completely different. The ornaments are beautified by Krishna. So similarly, the sandalwood was decorating Krishna's beautiful face and attracting Bhishma Dev's mind to it more and more. Here is Prabhupada's purport, and this is the last thing we'll read today. When Sri Krishna, by his own internal potency, appears on earth, he does so by the agency of his internal potency. Excuse me, by his own internal pleasure, for his own reason to satisfy himself, he comes to earth, he does this by his internal potency. The attractive features of the transcendental body are desired in all the three worlds, namely the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Nowhere in the universe are there such beautiful bodily features as those on Krishna. That means Krishna's ears, Krishna's eyes, Krishna's nose, Krishna's mouth, Krishna's forehead, Krishna's cheeks, Krishna's chin, Krishna's hair, Krishna's shoulders, Krishna's eyebrows, Krishna's every part of his body, broad chest, legs, everything, his voice, everything. The perfection of attraction. Therefore, his transcendental body has nothing to do with anything materially created. Arjuna is described here as the conqueror, Vijay. And Krishna is described as his intimate friend, Bhishma Dev, on his bed of arrows, after the battle of Kurukshetra, is remembering the particular dress of Lord Krishna, which he put on as the driver of Arjuna's chariot. That means that while Krishna was driving the chariot, he was decorated with beautiful paintings made out of sandalwood. when we see pictures of today's modern warriors, you know, they're wearing camos, they're camouflage, and they put black on their face so that they won't reflect. But Krishna was dressed so beautifully and delicately while he was driving the chariot. And tomorrow we're going to hear of some of the most amazing decorations that Krishna was wearing. Some of them were placed by Bhishma himself. While fighting was going on between Arjuna and Bhishma, Bhishma's attraction was drawn by the glittering dress of Krishna. And indirectly he admired his so-called enemy Arjuna for possessing the Lord as his friend. Arjuna was always conqueror because the Lord was his friend. Remember, these qualities that Bhishma Dev is expressing are very useful for us to know. Because we are hearing the Bhagavatam. Why? To develop our attraction to Krishna. And this is required to make advancement in spiritual life, because we must become attracted to Krishna away from the attractions of Maya. Krishna's form is all attractive. Krishna's qualities are all attractive. And as we read this, these descriptions by Bhishma Dev, we should note what qualities Krishna has that attract us to him. And especially we will require this at the time of our death, as Bhishma Dev is focusing his consciousness on Krishna at the time of his death. Bhishma Dev takes this opportunity, and we should not think that it's not going to happen to us. Don't think, Prabhupada once said, when he saw a young disciple looking at him, sort of when he was ill, near the time when he left this world, and his body was transcendental, but yet it was so frail and thin and weak and old and decrepit. And Prabhupada said, don't think that this is not going to happen to you. Bhishma Dev takes this opportunity to address the Lord as Vijay Sakhi, the friend of Arjuna, because the Lord is pleased when he's addressed co-jointly with his devotee, who are related with him in different transcendental yumas. While Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna, sun rays glittered on the dress of the Lord, and the beautiful hue created by the reflections of such rays was never forgotten by Bhishma Dev. As a great fighter, he was relishing the relation of Krishna in the chivalrous yuma. So he had that mood, and he was appreciating Krishna's strength, and he was relating Krishna to Krishna with such chivalry. And Prabhupada at the end of this purport says that we should note how the great general is transcendentally related with the Lord. What is it in Krishna that's attracting Bhishma? We should note. Okay, thank you very much. So we'll continue with Bhishma's prayers tomorrow. No time for questions.